On June 16, 2015, a reality TV star descended a golden escalator to announce his presidential candidacy, and American democracy entered its most dangerous chapter yet. But this crisis didn't begin with Trump Tower. It started centuries earlier, in a nation born with a fatal contradiction, proclaiming equality while denying it to most of its people. Today, we're watching the culmination of a decades-long assault on democracy itself, orchestrated through ballot boxes and courtrooms rather than tanks and soldiers. The question isn't whether America can survive this moment, it's whether we understand how we got here. Because buried in our history is a deliberate distortion so profound that millions of Americans now believe defending hierarchy is defending tradition, that suppressing votes is protecting integrity, and that authoritarianism is patriotism. In 1855, Chicago Tribune editor Joseph Medill reclaimed conservative for slavery opponents, noting the Declaration mentioned all men, not free white men. Lincoln embraced this, arguing Republicans were true conservatives by adhering to the founders' opposition to slavery. His 1860 Cooper Union speech asked, "What is conservatism? Is it not adherence to the old and tried against the new and untried?" The 1930s flipped this meaning. When FDR's New Deal regulated business and expanded opportunity, opponents adopted conservative while fighting government action. This wasn't conservatism, it was radical redefinition. Those opposing business regulation and racial advances weren't defending American tradition, they were the dangerous radicals Lincoln warned against. This linguistic sleight of hand created a powerful narrative tool that still shapes politics today. The New Deal nearly collapsed in 1937 when FDR cut spending under pressure from deficit hawks. Unemployment surged and markets tumbled. Pearl Harbor changed everything. Over 16 million Americans served in World War II, proving massive government investment could create prosperity. By 1945, most Republicans joined Democrats in supporting regulated business, safety nets, and infrastructure. Under Republican President Eisenhower, this consensus flourished. Chief Justice Earl Warren's Supreme Court enforced equality through Brown v. Board of Education. By 1956, Republican Arthur Larson described an authentic American center, a uniquely American consensus where both parties accepted government should work for all citizens. Infrastructure expanded, education grew, the middle class thrived. This wasn't socialism, it was pragmatic Americanism, recognizing democracy functions best when prosperity is widely shared. But this golden age contained fatal seeds. It connected federal power to civil rights, a connection that would be weaponized to tear the consensus apart. What forced white lawmakers to confront civil rights wasn't abstract principles, it was visceral horror. In February 1946, Isaac Woodard, a decorated Black World War II veteran still in uniform, asked a bus driver for a restroom break. When he objected to being called boy, Police Chief Linwood Scholl arrested him and viciously beat him with a billy club, blinding him in both eyes. The NAACP spread Woodard's story widely. Orson Welles read his affidavit on his popular radio show. When an all-white jury acquitted Scholl after 30 minutes, President Truman, deeply troubled despite his Southern upbringing, established the President's Committee on Civil Rights and banned discrimination in the military, civil service, and defense contracts. The movement gained momentum through continued brutality. 14-year-old Emmett Till's murder, his mother's open casket funeral exposing racism's horror, the Montgomery bus boycott facing violent opposition. By 1957, Eisenhower sent troops to enforce school integration in Little Rock, and Congress passed the Civil Rights Act with bipartisan support. The federal government had committed to protecting citizens' rights, and this explicit connection between federal power and civil rights would become the vulnerability opponents exploited to resurrect hierarchy. The 1954 Brown decision exposed a fatal weakness in the liberal consensus by connecting federal action to civil rights. Opponents claimed the government was misusing tax dollars from hardworking white Americans to promote undeserving Black people, framing civil rights enforcement as virtually socialism. This resurrected white supremacist language from Reconstruction when opponents argued black voting would lead to wealth redistribution through taxes. Richard Nixon perfected this strategy with his Southern strategy, courting white supremacist Democrats and promising to stop federal desegregation enforcement. Ronald Reagan refined the approach, launching his presidential campaign in Philadelphia, Mississippi, where three civil rights workers had been murdered, with a speech supporting states' rights. He promoted the myth of a Chicago welfare queen using coded racial language, while his slogan to "Make America Great Again" invited voters to remember a time before black, brown, and female voices claimed equal rights. The results were devastating. Tax cuts slashed top rates from 70% to 30%, while the national debt tripled, turning America from the world's largest creditor to its largest debtor. The wealth gap that had narrowed from 1933-1980 reversed dramatically. By 1990, Newt Gingrich instructed Republicans to use words like corrupt and traitors when referring to Democrats. Pat Buchanan's 1992 convention speech declared a culture war for the soul of America, a deliberate strategy to make compromise impossible, transforming opponents into enemies. Republicans discovered their rhetoric kept Democrats defensive, allowing systematic weakening of democratic mechanisms. Grover Norquist's 1986 Americans for Tax Reform united business interests, evangelicals, and social conservatives. Republicans championed ballot integrity measures operatives privately hoped would disenfranchise black voters. After Democrats passed the Motor Voter Act in 1993, Republicans accused them of enabling illegal immigrant voters, despite finding nothing. This paid off in Florida, where a 1997 law purged up to 100,000 black voters. During the 2000 election, with Bush leading Gore by just 537 votes, Republican operatives staged the Brooks Brothers riot to stop the recount. Five Republican-appointed Supreme Court justices intervened despite widespread disenfranchisement of Democratic African-American voters. Attorney General Edwin Meese screened judicial nominees for ideological purity, advancing originalism, arguing the Constitution limited federal power to what was explicitly written in 1787, effectively prohibiting business regulation, social safety nets, and civil rights protections. DOJ lawyer Samuel Alito proposed using presidential signing statements to advance the unitary executive theory that congressional oversight is unconstitutional. Democracy wasn't dying dramatically, it was being methodically dismantled through legal mechanisms and institutional capture. Donald Trump understood Republican base voters better than establishment politicians, offering extremists a hierarchical world where they would dominate women and minorities. Despite losing the popular vote, he won the Electoral College and immediately demonstrated authoritarian intent, insisting his inaugural crowd exceeded Obama's, gaslighting, while Steve Bannon promised to flood the zone with shit to exhaust the public. The January 6, 2021 assault represented decades of Republican embrace of hierarchical American history. When legal challenges failed, Trump developed a fake elector scheme and told armed supporters to fight like hell. One rioter carried the Confederate flag into the Capitol, a symbol that hadn't entered even during the Civil War. Trump's big lie became a Republican loyalty test. 19 states restricted voting access, particularly targeting black voters. The Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade and limited federal regulatory power. Republican governors openly use government power to reward friends and punish enemies. Yet democracy persists because Americans keep fighting. The Women's March showed diverse activists united. When Putin invaded Ukraine in 2022, the international community's coordinated response discredited arguments that autocracy was more efficient than democracy. America's true history is continuous democratic evolution, people honoring the idea that a nation can be based on human equality rather than hierarchy. Though democracy appeared to win in Lincoln's era, Americans failed to eliminate the hierarchical strand, leaving it available for future autocrats. Democracy isn't a spectator sport. It's daily practice defending equality. The question isn't whether democracy will survive. The question is whether you'll fight for it.